Listening to Coffee with Kenobi, you are. With Dan Z and Corey Club. The podcast you're looking for. This is. Yes.
For an entire generation, people have experienced Star Wars the only way it's been possible. On the TV screen. But if you've only seen it this way, you haven't seen it at all.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
We've been waiting for you.
The Force is strong here, even stronger than the coffee.
Welcome to Coffee with Kenobi. Here are your hosts, Dan Z and Corey Club.
Well, good morning, everybody. It is day three of Celebration Anaheim. Corey, you're here. We need to do a recap of what happened day two and what a day two it was. A lot of amazing stories. Ran into a lot of incredible people. Corey, let's just start here.
Yeah, we stood in line for a little while, getting in the queue, getting in the show. And then we saw that Dave Filoni was signing posters over at the Hasbro booth. So ran over there and got in line and waited for him. And it was excellent because we got to kind of shake his hand and say hi and give him our card and got to see him and, you know, mention Coffee with Kenobi. And he perked up and said, oh, hey, hi, you know, so he kind of knew who we were. So that was awesome to see that. He was totally gracious, totally awesome. And tons of fans are waiting for him, too.
Autograph.
Yeah, we got an autograph of him. New Season 2 of Rebels poster, so that was a lot of fun to have.
And how about that poster, too, being an artist yourself?
Oh, great.
The design has Vader and Ahsoka clashing, and Ahsoka has her back to him, and she's facing, like, you as you're looking at the picture. And it was pretty darn impressive.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the other thing, too, about the way it's designed is it's almost like she's unaware or she's maybe confused in what she's doing, you know?
I think that's fair. So as soon as that happened, we went in line, we saw Thomas and Wes from Star Wars in the classroom, hung out, and that was really cool. It's kind of interesting side note, getting to know Thomas and Wes as we have throughout this, and we were already friends with them before, but when you meet people in person, it's so different. I found that I'm a lot like Thomas, and you are a lot like Wes. Let's explore that a little bit.
Yeah, it's, you know, you seem to be more aggressive, and that's okay.
Aggressive,
and but with kind footing. So
aggressive negotiations.
Not with a lightsaber, though.
No. It was very kind, and you do a good job of getting out there and shaking people's hands, and getting kind of the hubbub of the mix of folks. And
well, I want to be mayor. You got to, you know, shake hands and all that stuff.
Maybe someday. Save your money. Flash your smile. Anyway. Like you said, we compared ourselves kind of to Wes and Thomas, and Thomas is very much your identity, and Wes is very much my identity, is where we kind of laid back. But we're balanced each other out. We talk about that, too, the balance.
I agree. So as soon as that was done, I was fortunate to be able to go over, and I'm sure you've all seen by now the live stream and the Cantina Cast stage at Stars.com set up. And so I wanted to volunteer there, so we're working with them on that, trying to get as many of our bloggers over there as we could. We're able to pull some fans from the crowd,
yep,
and get them on stage for a little bit, be part of the live stream, which is super, super cool. They were thrilled to do that, and it was fun. Got some incredible pictures. But here's the funny thing about all this, and I'm going to let you talk about it naturally. Originally, I was like, okay, I'm going to suit up, because they have costumes. They're beautiful costume designs that are just incredible. When you see the masks up live and in person, it's absolutely stunning. And you feel like you're part of the cantina. So we're in there. And Corey's like, you know, I don't really want to do it. I'm going to walk around the convention floor. You can hang out. Because I was scheduled from 10 to 3. Didn't get over there till 11 because we're trying to get Dave's autograph and all that good stuff. So, Corey, what happened with your I'll be up there for a half hour thing?
Yeah, so, exactly right. You know, we went back there and the costume us up. And it's pretty sweet. It's unique because they had a whole rack of space jackets and space boots and costumes and all kinds of stuff. And he's like, let's get you in gear. And got me all in this snazzy green space jacket. I felt real unique and flipped the collar up. Was looking
fly.
Pretty fly. Yeah, I would have to say.
For a podcast guy.
Yeah, exactly. So we got downstairs and we're walking around the cantina, and they're doing some live shots and promoting some awesome stuff. And of course, they tell you that they count down from 10 to kind of give you a ready stage, and you're supposed to act natural in the background, talk to some other folks, and just act like you're the cantina. And that's easy to do, fun to do. So they break for another set, and we're kind of sitting there milling about and taking some photos and having fun and waving to people. And all of a sudden, Peter Mayhew just shows up. He just shows up, literally just comes in with his little entourage and says, hey, I want to sit back in the back of the cantina and just hang out with you guys. And nobody objected, and they're like, heck yeah, let's do this. And so he rolls up, and so he sits down, and they do a little segment with him, interview him. But I had an opportunity to walk over and just say hi and just express my love for the work that he does and his love for the saga and all the fans. And I got to shake his hand, and I keep telling people this. It's so funny because I shook his hand, and it's, as you guys probably know, he's a giant of a man, giant of a heart of a man. And his hand wrapped around my own hand. But it was warm and comforting, and I just didn't want to leave that space. But he was a very, very kind man. We got a quick photo, and very gracious off to the side there. So it was a lot of fun to have him there in our presence, and very cool.
Yeah, that was, and here's the fun behind the scenes. Here's some exclusive behind the scenes for Coffee with Kenobi. As I mentioned before, Corey started telling you what happened, which is amazing. You should have, what was it like when you were on the cantina set and you were trying to get my attention as I was kind of doing crowd control and stuff like that? What was my face like?
Yeah, so we're standing there, and as Peter Mayhew comes in, Dan, you were off to the side, and we were kind of waving. Yeah, we had seen Peter just kind of hanging out right on the side there waiting to get in, and you're like, hey, what's going on? You kind of get your facial expressions, and we're kind of pointing, like, hey, hello, look right there. And you walk over, you look confused, and you're looking around, and your eyes drop, and you see, and your face just drops, and you go, oh, and you understand. All has become full circle now.
Yeah, but don't I always look confused? Is that different?
That's not too much different, but
not
yeah.
Not entirely. So, and the more fun part about that, seeing Peter Mayhew, you know, when you're 5 inches away from him is remarkable. What can you say? The funny part that I think everybody will appreciate is that Corey said he may be able to do it for a half hour. He was like up there for 4 hours. He was probably on the live stream half the day. He was like drunk with power. I couldn't get him off there. Now he's got an agent. It's a whole thing. But in all honesty, it was remarkable. So eventually, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say real quick too, you know, that was our only action with, you know, cast from the original series. We were fortunate enough to rewind a little bit here. We were standing in the queue to get in the area, and who would walk by but Anthony Daniels himself, working the crowd like a charm. And what happened next, Dan?
Yeah, so I got to the end of the line, and he was walking by talking to people, and he would talk to a young man next to me who was on our show yesterday for a little bit, which is really, really cool. His name escapes me. I apologize. It's amazing how little sleep you get at a convention. It really is true. So he was talking to this guy, and the young man talked about how much he enjoyed him on stage for the Star Wars performances, the Star Wars orchestral performances, and he talked about how much fun he had, and I said to him, you know, you did a really nice job of that. I think you've got a real future. And he looked at me, and he laughed, and he shook my hand. Anthony Daniels, I'm talking about.
Yeah, we got a picture of that, too. I was right over your shoulder. I was snapping pictures as fast as possible to see what had happened. But, yeah, he was totally charmed, totally, totally, totally awesome. So
yeah, that was incredibly, incredibly cool. So just walking around and being in the cantina, here's who we got to meet. Pablo Hidalgo, Mark Newbold, Jonathan Wilkins, Jordan White from Marvel Comics, who edits, of course, their Star Wars line, a whole ton of fans.
Not to mention, you know, the great people at StarWars.com who've supported us as well. So yeah, it's nice to be able to see that support straight from the top and straight from the company itself.
Yeah, we're talking about Grace and Katie and, of course, Matt. And we actually had a long conversation with Andy Gutierrez from Rebels Recon, and that was really cool. We talked with her a while. I talked with Dan Brooks, and there's some really, truly great people. We're a broken record, and we're good with that, but they really are legitimate, sincere, incredible people. And speaking of incredible, here's what happened later. Billy Dee Williams and Corey Dee Williams show up. I was like 5 inches away from him, too.
Well, we swapped places, too. You know, yeah. Here's the other thing, too. I did it for a while and got to hang out and have some fun. But Dan was antsy-pantsy, and I think
he was
crowd control, but I think you're itching just to get in there and get a costume on. So, Dan, I want to know, how did it feel to dress up?
Well, the reason I was itching is I wore the same costume that you had worn.
Hey, now, that was not true. That's a lie.
No, it's not true at all. It was pretty neat. I got to wear a mask. I was one of the Biths.
Yeah.
Which is coming to play very soon.
Classic character.
Otherwise, I had like a Moisture Farmer outfit on, and I'm not sure where it is on the stream.
You had a dual role.
Yeah, I was too.
How was that mindset for you to get into each character each time?
You know, I just live in the moment. You have to... You know, a Bith will eat, drink, and breathe the same as a Moisture Farmer. You know, I mean, just because we look different doesn't mean that we actually are.
Like, spoken like a true actor, folks. Here it is, straight from the top.
That's right. Billy D's there. It was very, very specific, you know, what we were allowed to do when he was there, and that was fine. We kind of said hi, but he's so busy, and, you know, he's got a lot of people around him helping him out. So that was cool. And then we found out something. We got a little bit of word that Weird Al Yankovic was there. Yeah, it's true. Weird Al Yankovic was there. Everybody knows him. And so we contacted Jeff McGee, who, of course, blogs for us. Awesome. He's been on this celebration. Great to get to know him. That noise you just heard, anytime a metal bar drops in the queue, everyone cheers. It's sort of like a thing.
Yeah, coming in their own, yeah.
So we got Jeff on stage, and Weird Al came on. And I'll let Jeff tell the story later today. I'm sure we'll definitely see him. But it's pretty remarkable. So I was in this Bith costume, and it's so screen accurate, hands, everything. It is so hot. You know how hot it was in there?
How hot?
400 degrees.
400 degrees, as hot as the Tatooine sun,
it's
right?
Fahrenheit, you know. Sure. So it was incredibly hot. I could not see a darn thing. And all of a sudden, I was aware that Weird Al Yankovic was pointing up at us, and he was talking about which Cantina band member was his favorite. So I started dancing. The guy next to me started dancing. We could not see each other. And fortunately, Weird Al thought that I was pretty legit, man.
Well, you were screen accurate for sure. And like I said, these costumes are awesome. And Weird Al Yankovic showing up was totally unique, too.
He liked my dancing, right?
Well, there you go. That's good enough for you, right?
Raise your hand.
You sound at night.
I can. So at the end, it was pretty surreal. He had to leave because they were doing all their interviews and stuff. So myself and a bunch of other awesome people, we met so many great people wearing masks, just dressing up, having a good time. And so we were part of the security team that escorted Weird Al Yankovic off of the show floor, and he thanked us. He was really gracious. I was right behind him.
Yeah, so I want to know, how close were you to him?
I was very close. Awesome. I was very close. Yeah, right behind him, exactly. And then he thanked us. Super cool guy. And, you know, I texted my wife, and I put a hashtag bucket list I didn't even know that I had.
No, I love that. That's great.
It was really funny. I got to meet Mark from Jedi News, not Mark Newbold, but Mark from Chicago. Hello, Mark. So that was super, super cool. Just so many wonderful things. I'm sure we're missing stuff.
Yeah.
It was great. We got to see our bloggers. Got to have dinner with Ryder and his wife, Jana, and Troy and Tommy and their families and Brandy. And it was just really, really wonderful. And then we went to Disneyland.
Yeah, Disneyland, which I think the last time I was here, I was 8 years old. And maybe I had done Space Mountain or something like that. And I don't remember it too well, but I've been to Walt Disney World, which is comparably,
smaller.
It's a snapshot of Disneyland is a snapshot of Disney World. So, of course, you know, walking around with Dan, the encyclopedia of Disney knowledge, or I call him, was pointing out things and looking for secret doors and working the crowd and doing what he does best. And of course, I was just in awe of his knowledge of every different thing. And the biggest thing we did, he said, you know, there's an Indiana Jones ride. And I was like, oh, there is. Well, I mean, you mean the stage show? He's like, no, there's actually a ride. And I've never ridden that. Indiana Jones being only second to Star Wars for me, as far as, you know, things that I just can't stop and talking about. And I think that the ride itself was
amazing.
Totally unique.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, the other thing, I want to get my... It was so much fun because it felt like you walk around the movie. We kept talking about the sets. The sets were so dead on. Disney does such a great job of putting you right there into, you know, whatever area, whatever place that's supposed to be, Frontierland or Adventureland, and you feel like you walked right into a different world.
Yeah.
So for Indiana Jones, it's exactly the same thing. You walk through all these different caves, and you're walking through traps and stuff. And, riding the ride itself was a lot of fun because I'd never done it before, and I was unique for the first time. You know, my thoughts on this is, you know, dear Steven Spielberg, you know, let's just take the Indy 5. This is it, right? It's already made.
That's right.
It's already ready to go. So I think it's just take that from the ride there and adapt that into a movie.
Yeah, we tweeted some pictures to Ed because we wish he was there. We wish you were here, my friend, just being a celebration. Well, someday, maybe there'll be a celebration in Australia. That would be
awesome.
Yeah, that would be super cool. Well, when we say Kathleen Kennedy, we'll ask her, and she'll say, get away from me. Who are you? You weirdo,
yes,
right?
We'll be escorted out quickly, yes.
Yeah, we rode Indy, which is my favorite ride. Absolutely remarkable. Went on Pirates, went on the Haunted Mansion, walked around a little bit, got pictures in front of the castle. I had to get a Starbucks cup from my lovely wife. And we got home really late, released our show from day one. And, dude, we are ready. Today is a big day. What's going on today?
Today we got, I call it the Rebels Day. because I'm a huge Rebels fan. I love it. I am a huge fan.
I like it.
And I was just excited to see that they kind of queued up this day for that only. Well, not only. I guess there's tons of things going on. A lot of things that conflict. This is the biggest day, I think, seems like, crowd-wise. We're starting the queue here just to get in, and we're about three lines over from yesterday. We were in about one or two lines over. But, you know, this is definitely a bigger crowd, and it's sold out. Dan, I saw things on the door that said totally sold out, completely sold out, you know. So it's going to be a huge day.
I mean, usually we got the Rebels, Heroes and Villains panel. We had a press conference. We're going to talk with a very, very special guest that is no stranger to Coffee with Kenobi listeners or to Star Wars fans in general. Wonderful guy. We're very excited about that. Tonight's the premiere. We're going to go see James Arnold Taylor's show. So much going on. And then later, hopefully, we're going to catch up with Ian Desher, author, of course, of William Shakespeare Star Wars. So a wonderful day. Hoping to talk to lots of fans. And let's keep this party started, my friend. The adrenaline's still there.
Sounds great. Let's do it.
That was Richard from Skywalking Through Neverland. And here's Thomas. What panel is this?
The Star Wars Holiday Special. I know, it's so awesome. So awesome.
That's perfect.
Life Day.
No, it's still going on.
I know.
Now it's zero.
Okay, so that means it's done?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Clark. All right. Are you guys ready for your host? James Arnotella, I said, wait a minute. I mean, that's my name right there. Somebody get a picture of that. Tag it, LOL for life too.
How come yours doesn't move?
Because I couldn't afford what you have, Elliot. All right, well, if you guys are ready for our panel, Rebels and the cast of Rebels, please put your hands together for your host of our panel, James Arnold Taylor!
Looks like the trailer. Oh, kind of.
Stage? Where am I? Okay, just look, get out of my way.
James is interacting with the very first trailer of The Force Awakens.
Go so quick, I'm late!
Just fell off the speeder.
Oh my god!
Hey, could you guys give me a lift? Okay, just park it right in the main stage. Now, oh my god, okay. Hey, how are you? Hello, 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 hello. Look at all of these beautiful people. I had time to change. You like it? You see these? Oh, hey, can you? Where's the camera? Is this the camera? Is this the one that would show up there? Can we show that? Look at that. These are our special Rebel shoes. One of a kind. All the characters right there. Joe Hogan is the artist. You got to check him out. He did a great job on these shoes, and I thank him very, very much. My name is James Arnold Taylor. You having a fun time? Bunch of rebels, you. Yeah. So I'm a voice actor, and I do voices in little padded rooms, talking to myself. That's what I do. And people always ask me, well, have you done anything that I would know? Have I heard you in anything? And I say, well, I was Obi-Wan Kenobi and Master Grogu on the Clone Wars. But I'm also the evil genius, the leader on Hulk and the Agents of Smash. But I'm also Bobby from Doc McStuffins.
Yeah, but you ever do a Fred Flintstone too?
And totally awesome Johnny Test!
I'm the voice that tells you what's coming up next on Animation Domination. I've even been the skull in the legend of Jack Sparrow.
No, mate. It's Captain Jack Sparrow, who are voiced in video games.
Yes. Oh, hey, speaking of video games, I've been Ratchet from Ratchet & Clank, Tidus from Final Fantasy X, your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, the Silver Surfer,
Professor Charles Xavier.
Sometimes when celebrities aren't able to do their own voice, I fill in for them. People like Michael J. Fox for things like Stuart Lewin and Disney's Atlantis: The Lost Empire. Whoa!
I'm also Hiccup for How to Train Your Dragon when Jay Baruchel is not Hiccup.
Christopher Lee is Fish Legs on that.
I've been on for the Giant and the Princess Bride game.
Didn't you go to the Spider-Man? That's pricey, but I've been prepared. Rest for walking. Thank you so much. Thank you. So I'm going to be doing my show tonight, back here, 6 o'clock, the main stage. It's called Talking to Myself. It's a double feature with somebody you may know, Mark Hamill. So I'll do my show, you stay in, you get nice and comfortable, and then we're going to start Mark's show right after that, and I'll come out and interview him. We're going to have a good time. Has anybody seen any of the show so far here on the main stage? Favorite moments? Anybody favorite moments?
Trailer,
yeah. How about Carrie Fisher? Woo! Anthony Daniels last night?
Yep.
Oh, man. Ray Park was a lot of fun. We've got Billy D tomorrow. We've got all sorts of stuff. We have the Smuggler's Bounty coming up here later this afternoon. Please come back for that right now. We are set for the big one. This is exciting, isn't it? I am very excited for this show. We are going to bring out some faces that you've heard their voices, but now you need to see their faces. You need to experience this. Are we ready for Rebels?
Are we ready for Rebels?
I let Obi-Wan do the let's get ready to rumble.
Let's get ready for Rebels!
Talented female voice actors out there, just a doll and lovely and a huge Star Wars fan. She plays Hera, Vanessa Marshall. Sure. He is Kanan. He is a Jedi. He is strong.
He's a buddy. Force.
He is Freddy Prinze Jr. We have some special surprise guests. Because you see, we got a couple extra seats here. So I want to bring out one of the producers here, one of the very important people in the world of Rebels, but also in the world of Star Wars. Mr. Simon Kinberg, let's hear it for him. This is a new face for you. You may not know him. He's done some work on another show that was out before called Clone Wars.
He's
a personal friend of mine.
And he is an amazing person in the world of Star Wars, and we have a lot to thank him for. He is Mr. Dave Filoni. Try to provide for you. I'm sorry. We got a small turnout. Hey, these are the best seats in the house.
Lucky.
Now, some of you guys have not been to Celebration before, correct? Wow, many of you. What's it like so far? Just anybody. Anybody got a thought?
This is the first 5 seconds of it, and that's pretty crazy seeing all you guys out there, so thanks for showing up.
Really, really big. Really big.
Now, before we dive into all of this, we have a lot to cover, and the time is going to go by fast. So, Dave, can you just kind of set the ground rules? Can you give us a little something? Tell us about season one and how it all kind of came together.
Well, season one, you know, we were kind of moving beyond what we had done in Clone Wars, and we were targeting a time period, and we knew we wanted to work between episode 3 and 4. So, the main theme there really was Rebels, and I think something that we all wanted to explore was, well, what about a Jedi kid that grows up and there is no Jedi order to find him? What do they do? Kids don't stop being born with the Force just because the Empire's taken over. So we kind of formulated a story based around a boy, and Simon wanted it to be a family dynamic, and living on a ship. All the kind of things that we had grown up with in the era of A New Hope. You know, that sense of living on the Falcon, a group of friends together that felt like a family, being chased by Galactic Empire. All those things were different ingredients than we had really done on Clone Wars, which was very four-part arc, different character groups. So it just seemed a natural transition. And then by the end of it, you know, the diabolical plan came together because I got to put Ahsoka Tano in it because she would stay alive.
Our first meeting. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
How about you? How's this experience been for you working on this show?
Well, it's been amazing. I mean, I grew up on Star Wars. Star Wars was the reason I wanted to get into movies in the first place. So when I'd been working with the Lucasfilm folks on some of the features, they came to me because they know I have two boys who love animated shows and now have grown up on Clone Wars. And asked me if I wanted to get involved, and I got so excited about it and excited about working with Dave. And we really built it from the ground up, like he said, and the thing that was the most important to us, other than the time period and this notion of sort of creating a family of characters that would live on a ship together, was the tone. It was making it as much like the original films as we could, to have the humor, the humanity, the sort of velocity of those original movies. That was, as much as anything story-wise, it was the vibe of the show that we spent a lot of time trying to create, and Dave did such a fabulous job with all of our artists at creating an aesthetic, a look for the show that feels like the original movies, but also has its own aesthetic to it as well, because it's based on a lot of the original art.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think we like what they came up with, don't we?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen. Thank you so much. But I want this now to be for anybody. You all jump in, your family, you can cut each other off, beat each other up, it's all right. For all of you, how does it feel to be adopted and admired by this Star Wars community? Anybody got any thoughts right off the bat?
I feel very nurtured.
It's amazing. Best fans in the world.
Yeah, you're like one giant mother holding me. I love it. You guys are incredible.
You know, you guys got a little bit of this last year at Star Wars Weekends. And I remember that expression the first time you came out on a stage and there was, you know, thousands of people looking and cheering for you. And you're like, what? And so this is the most loving group of people you ever find, Star Wars fans. You are wonderful fans. You so love this, it means something to you, and then you put it back on these people. So your appreciation of Star Wars has it changed much now, working in this?
For me,
I mean, this scar on my chin is from playing Star Wars. So.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, you can't just say that. You got to give the story.
We bit this flagpole, if not like a flagpole, little flagpole, back and forth until it snapped. And I was Luke, my cousin Chris was Vader, and I was sliding down the slide, and the flagpole hit the ground before I did it.
Oh,
my chin. My mom had to witness this. She saw me get so many injuries. It literally was like, put him in a car. Let's go. Come on. So I had the appreciation, but it's gotten real deep. Like, you do this, and I didn't start Twitter until Star Wars. And I was like, hey, I'm on this show. Check it out. It's Rebels. And, like, in a week, I was doing full-on, like, Twitter role-play sessions as Kanan with, like, Imperials trying to kill me. And I'm like, oh, you think you're going to kill Kanan? Are you crazy? Are you crazy? Let me tweet this at you. I need more characters. All right, here's a second tweet. And I just jumped in. And I love it. So thanks. If you guys are out there and you do that RP, you guys rock right on, and I'll do it with you.
That scar thing on his chin happened like 2 weeks ago, just so you know.
Taylor, how about you? How's this been? I mean, you know, new kid on the block with this character, like this young character, fresh out.
Yeah, no, I love it. It's so fun because it's cool talking to kids and seeing what they feel about this because they are the main people who watch the show. I mean, everyone watches the show, it seems like. But it's so fun and it's Star Wars. Everyone loves it, which is the coolest part.
Yeah. And Tia, this is, I mean, your character is so strong for ladies. They love it. But how is that for you?
That feels pretty good. I have said this before, but I had seen the original trilogy when I was a kid, and I knew at the time that it was a big deal, but I don't think I really knew. And so once I got this job is when I went and I was like, oh, I need to do as much Star Wars homework as I possibly can. So I started watching Clone Wars. So serendipitously, it was at the same time that Clone Wars got on Netflix. And I was like, oh, this works out great. So I started watching binge watching Clone Wars. And I rewatched the original trilogy. And then I really understood, like fully understood what all the fuss is about. And so I feel like I can truly say now that I'm a huge Star Wars fan. And my mom, in fact, now is a huge Star Wars fan. She watches Clone Wars on Netflix. She watches Rebels, and she calls me after every episode. She's like, I want to talk about Kanan. I want to talk about Ezra's parents, like the whole... And she said something to me which I thought was really special. She was like, you know what's great about Star Wars? You can come to it at any time in your life, and it doesn't matter where you're from or what your background is. You can come to Star Wars and be a full-fledged fan, like my mom. You know, and it's an amazing thing.
And there's no judging. We all go, you saw it, you like it, come here.
Exactly. Yeah.
Hey, so I'm going to start with you, Taylor, and we're going to go down the line. On a scale from 1 to 10, on a Star Wars fan scale, where would you have rated yourself before you started the show and now?
Okay, to be honest, don't hate me, I had only seen a few of the movies. Dang, everyone knows it. So I'd say a solid 3. Okay. And now like a 303.
Okay.
Okay. Tia?
I'm gonna just say, based on sheer ignorance, I would be at like a 4.2, and now I'm at like a...
Got one up on him.
Yeah. Always.
So sorry, and now? And now you are...
Oh, like, what's the highest, 10?
10.
We're at a 10, yeah.
Okay. Mr. Boo.
I hate judgment. I don't like numbers. I'm not good with them. So mine is sort of a sliding scale because I had the distinction of being their opening weekend for A New Hope. So
that
gives me some credit. I'm completely ignorant about most things. I can't remember names. I started with a little bit of cred going in. So I think I was a solid 5 or 6, maybe,
really?
If I had to put a number on it. And now, we're 2-11, baby.
Now, Vanessa, I kind of feel I already know this, but where are you at?
Probably 10 to begin with. And I don't think we have... It's in quantifying. You can't put a number on the infinity of feelings that I have. Clearly, I can't even speak. I'm so happy. Yeah, it's...
Cast as Kanan, I was really excited because I knew that you were a big Star Wars fan. So I was thinking, I was putting myself in your shoes, going, this has got to be through the moon with this. So you were, I'm guessing, a pretty high number already to begin with on the scale.
Yeah, my mom taught me at a very young age, people are going to make fun of you no matter what, so just commit to what you love and don't care what anyone says. So I embraced, you know, liking the stuff I liked a long, long time ago. I mean, like I said, this is from Star Wars. It's not from a cool fight that I had. I'm not going to tell you some fake story, but he got it worse than me. No, it's not. I was an easy 10 going in, and I'm a 10 still to this day. But when Dave said this a long time ago when we first started, you know, for my generation, this is, and even older, Steve. Even though I have more gray hair than Steve does. But it's in your DNA at that point. So when you hear, may the force be with you, as often as you hear, I love you, Mom, it works.
That's right. Now, Simon, do we need to ask? I mean,
I'd never seen a Star Wars movie until a couple of years ago. So I started a solid one. And my first memory, not of seeing a movie, but of life, was seeing New Hope.
Really?
And I waited in line and slept in a sleeping bag the night before Empire Strikes Back came out, and was on the streets of Westwood Village in a sleeping bag. So I would say I was at a solid 10,
yes.
And if that's the max, it's never going to go up or down. I'm at a 10 for life.
Okay, good. Dave, do we even need to go there?
Okay. I would say that they've all been very fair. Knowing them, I think that's all true. I think of you all that way, with Taylor with the most learned, which is just like Ezra,
yeah.
With the Mandalorian obviously having to put herself over on the next person, which is Steve being kind of right in the middle, you're never really sure how much he knows or not.
Fake like you.
This one, you know, I don't even know what to do with.
Super dork.
You know more, and it's amazing. You can almost challenge Pablo. I don't know. He's still the king. And then we've got you, which I will say. I mean, and everybody, Simon will remember this. We had to cast Rebels very, very quickly for a production. We had to get the show up and running so fast. So we only really, at the end of the day, what should take months, we had to do it in a matter of about a week. And everyone said we couldn't do it. It was going to be really impossible. But we had, the trials came to reads. Simon, Greg Weissman, and I were all pretty much unified. Every time we said this person, this person, this person, it was always the same people. And I just remember, especially Freddie's read, because he knew it was Star Wars, even though we had cleverly coded it something else. He just knew. I'm not sure how. It's so obvious.
Because you called the lightsaber a sun sword.
That was not me. It's not a Thunder the Barbarian thing, but...
Yeah,
anyway,
yeah.
Freddy's read was instant awesome. Star Wars to me. You had the swagger that we needed for our Jedi, which is a unique role. So, yeah. Yes, I love Star Wars very much.
Yes,
so.
You do. I'm so glad you do. Okay, you've kind of really covered some of this stuff, but I have some... No, it's great. You covered some of the dynamic. That's what I wanted to talk about. So I'm going to ask you some questions, kind of towards you guys, but feel free to chime in and cut them off. Who's the jokester in this group?
Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
Jokesters, that's such a widely defined thing. I think Steve Bloom.
No.
For sure, yeah. No. I think so.
He's the least professional in our group.
Yes. That's another way to put it. Thank you for it. I think so.
Okay.
There's like a burp on cue.
Can you give us a little burp on cue? And? Life of a voice actor. That's it. Okay. We kind of know who the Uber fan is, but Vanessa would be the Uber fan.
But I would say Freddie also. Freddie's is just a little less
overt.
Freddie's like a sniper.
You know the
so
show, you never know who is in charge. Is it Hera?
I was going to say, Kanan,
is it Kanan? So it's kind of like that. Who knows more? Is it Vanessa? Is it Freddie? Is it Vanessa? So it's just like, they're just like the show. It's creepy.
Yeah.
Hopefully we complement each other.
We have that on Clone Wars too. It's really weird.
I know like 5 things about Star Wars really well, and then the rest of the world is like, catch up. So in my small pool, I know a lot. You get me outside of that pool? No.
Okay.
We make a good team.
Yes.
She is an encyclopedia.
Yeah.
Who's the easiest to mess with? They all look at me. Let me stand over here so somebody at least can, you can then look over there. I'm so sorry.
It's just so good nature, he takes it.
Yeah, it's out of love.
It's teaching Star Wars. That's what we call it. Have they teaching me Star Wars?
It's like the ultimate try to want.
Have they pulled any tricks on you or anything? Anything you want to get them back for in front of, 5,000 people?
No, we're not
cool. Who's always on time?
Ready
on Steve. Okay. And,
I feel like this now.
Often late.
Not Steve.
I don't know. I have things to do. I'm preparing.
Yes, okay.
One of his 8,000 voices when he gets up.
Yeah, and Freddie, you bring up a good point. Now, Steve and Vanessa, both wildly popular in the world of voiceover and amazing voice actors. Show, because with Clone Wars, we all felt instantly like a family, and it was very different than any other shows that we do. Is it the same thing for you guys here on the show?
A gigantic family, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was an instant bond, I think. We all got along really well from the very beginning, except for me and Tia, but other than that, she's just not even paying attention.
Yeah, I think it was really well cast in the sense that our energies, as we roam the earth, pretty much match the characters. So when you put us in a room together, I'm usually feeding people, he's teaching Taylor this, that, and the thing. You're talking football, like chicks who are talking dude stuff, which we don't normally don't. Yeah. And Steve's making fun, like Zeb, Steve's making noises. It's a motley crew in real life, too, so it's great.
For the rest of you, Freddie, you've done actually quite a bit of voiceover as well.
A little. Not like these two, but a little.
A lot where you're maybe more isolated, just yourself in the booth, so now you've got this whole family.
That's what makes this, I think, so special. It's like we go on a road trip once a week, right, from LA to San Francisco. It's like this six-hour experience where we're all in an RV and we all get to hang out and do what basically is a radio show. We do the whole episode in order. So it's definitely a family vibe, whereas like for video games, when I did Iron Bowl or James Vega, that's like you're in a booth. Hey, Iron Bowl, love! You know who you are? That's a creepy scene if you played the game. So there you're just isolated and you're either reacting to someone who's pre-recorded or to nothing, and they have to react to you, which is a supporting character in a game, doesn't feel right. But anyway, this is all of us in one room, and it's like everybody says, it's a family vibe. Steve's making noises, and if you do this take, it's like the best take you've ever done, right? Kanan's giving you some real emotion, and it's this powerful moment, and as soon as I'm done...
Oh.
Only it'll be like, I'll be crying, you know what I mean? Like, I'm upset, it's like a powerful moment.
I don't
moment.
Let them I'm do all the scenes together, masters. And you hear, sometimes I kick half in the mouth. Sometimes I do. On the important scenes I do, that drives the rest of you nuts.
Yeah.
Because then I'll be like, alright, you all, half of you have to leave, I gotta do something with just Freddie and Vanessa today and dismiss you. And then you all wonder, I will imagine you text you, what happened in that scene? What was going on? That's the whole thing with...
You see how Dave's a Sith Lord, right? You guys see that, right? You notice every time you ask him a question about anyone from Clone Wars, he just goes total Sith on you, right? Because you know honest information. And any information he does give you is to lead you over there. When what's funny
is always, there's always truth in there. There's always truth in there. All right, Empire. All right, evil are a point of view, Freddy.
Yeah. Okay.
There was a reason we called him Master Pomoni on the show. Now, for all of you, what do you feel your characters have learned over the course of the season?
Well, one, how to be a Jedi.
Yeah.
Which is the coolest. But he's also learned what family is, because he was so self-reliant on his own. He's now embraced what a family is, and he now sticks up for other people, and it's been fun. But obviously the coolest is learning how to be a Jedi.
And how to use a lightsaber. And for all of us to learn... While you're learning, I think that's been the greatest part of the show, hasn't it? Getting that kind of behind the scenes for the kids, the experience, and Star Wars. Hey, see ya, how was you?
I think Sabine has learned sort of how to be a little more trusting. I think, this is this is her family presently.
Sure, what that means. So
just,
spoiler alert.
I don't know what I just said. But I think, you know, Sabine in season one was the first, was the most sort of suspicious of Ezra. Like, not suspicious, but just like the least welcoming, because, you know, Kanan and Ezra have this bond, and of course, Hera's very, you know, maternal, and Zed's like gives him a hard time but doesn't mind him all that much. But I think Sabine was a little trepidatious about Ezra. And so I think that over the course of time of season one, I think she like warms up to him a little bit and stops calling him like kid and starts actually like calling him Ezra, you know? And so I think she kind of learns to be a little more trusting of the people that she spends all her time with.
Excellent. Well, you know, we have so much to cover. So I'm sorry, if I can jump for a minute. Dave, some way we can kind of sum up season one, the finale, and all of that, some thoughts. And Simon, feel free to jump in. This
the greatest finale ever.
The reaction. Let me ask you this. What does the future bring?
You want me to talk about the future?
Yes.
You know, they've done some great talk today, but it's always better. We spend all this time animating stuff and lighting it beautifully, my team, so it's better to look at stuff. What you see, what's to come. We can just see it.
Right.
And have you guys seen? You haven't seen
no,
this.
No, of course not. Why would you let
I shut you the other day.
There's a big screen behind you.
You might want, yeah, you guys can down there. Alright. So here's a look at season two.
Down in front.
It's very dark, Dave.
Things are getting worse just as they did back when I was your age. But back then, there were 10,000 Jedi Knights protecting the galaxy. Now,
there's just you and me.
We rob from the Empire, give to the needy. A noble cause.
Yeah.
I'm on my mark.
Gotcha.
Mission accomplished.
Yes, Master. The rebels of the Lothal system. Hunt them down.
As you wish.
Fighter coming in at Mark 3. We've lost Phoenix 1 and 2.
We will squeeze Lothal until someone reveals the whereabouts of these traitors.
For the good of Lothal, we have to leave. All right, if I tag along?
The more the merrier.
Fighting alongside soldiers isn't what I signed up for.
We are fighting a bigger fight.
We can't just run.
Ezra, we were lucky to survive. The fear. The anger. The hate. I haven't sensed a presence like that since...
The Clone Wars.
My name is Rex. Doing the Clone Wars. A friend of hers is a friend of mine.
Yeah!
Everyone, hang on!
For those, we are off on an adventure!
Rex, those ties up our back. Working on it!
Surrender or be destroyed.
I hope you brought a better class of soldier than this.
stormtroopers.
They'll all be coming.
I'm not afraid.
That's what worries me.
Your master has deceived you into believing you can become a Jedi.
There's just you and me.
We rob from the Empire, give to the needy. A noble cause.
Yeah.
I'm on my mark.
Gotcha.
Mission accomplished.
Lord Vader.
Yes, Master.
The rebels in the Lothal system. Hunt them down.
As you wish.
Fighter, coming in at Mark 3.
We've lost Phoenix 1 and 2.
We will squeeze Lothal until someone reveals the whereabouts of these traitors.
For the good of Lothal, we have to leave. All right, if I tag along?
More the merrier.
Fighting alongside soldiers isn't what I signed up for.
We are fighting a bigger fight.
We can't just run.
Ezra, we were lucky to survive. The fear, the anger, the hate. I haven't sensed a presence like that since...
The Clone Wars.
My name is Rex. Captain. 501st Clone Battalion. I fought with Commander Tano during the Clone Wars. A friend of hers is a friend of mine.
Hey, lot going on here. Dave, there was a couple characters there that I recognized. Privilege to be on the show as Obi-Wan in the first episode, and that was so great. But now we have some other Clone Wars alumni, and I think they're here in celebration. In fact, I think they're here right now, ladies and gentlemen. Ashley Eckstein and Dave.
I've been waiting for this moment for a long time.
We all have.
So wait, how does it? Is it now? It's time for a really dumb question. How does it feel? Ashley.
Oh my goodness. Well, the secret was out for me after the season one finale. That was a hard secret to keep. One day in the recording studio, and in walks Dee Bradley Baker. And I looked at Dave, and I mean, honestly, I looked at Dee, and I just started crying. Like, tears coming down my face, because it had been over 2 years since we recorded together, and I didn't know, you know, where Captain Rex was. I didn't know if Ahsoka knew where he was, and so I just started crying. I was so happy that Captain Rex was back.
How'd you get that call?
Well, it kind of took my breath away, because I mean, the only hopeful thing I had was that Rex hadn't been killed off in the Clone Wars, and so there was still some hope of that coming back into the story. So I was more than thrilled, because I want to see what this guy's still got in him, and I think the fans are really going to see that, along with a few of his clone friends. I guess I'm not going to tell you much more about that. I'll leave that to you to tell you.
My gosh, look at that.
But, as you saw, to see these fellows going up, these old lions going up an Imperial Walker is, it's pretty awesome.
Whoa.
But to me, more importantly, I mean, this is a very exciting trailer, as someone who loves Star Wars in the old way, and as well as in the new manifestations. I mean, it looks just fantastic, and it feels fun and energetic. It's got the drama and the fun, the light that the cast already brings to it, and it is very exciting.
It is exciting.
Is coming up.
And in fact, it's so exciting, I know that there are people here that would love to ask you all questions. So is it all right if we take some questions from this council right here?
And one more thing I want to say before we get to that is, because I appreciate you guys loving the trailer and something. I try to keep so many parts of Clone Wars alive in different ways. It's not just important to you guys, they're people I work with, they're important to me. Every trailer I ever did on Star Wars, Clone Wars, and now Rebels has been done by my personal friend Kevin Yost. We used to get together and play Star Wars role-playing game before we ever had jobs at Lucasfilm together. So I always make sure that Kevin is personally responsible for these type of cinematic trailers. And I just thank once again for your reaction. Kev, if you're here, you've done a phenomenal job. Thanks, buddy.
All right. Mark and Elliot, are you guys out there?
Yes, I'm over here. I have Lori from Tennessee.
Okay. Hey, Lori.
Hi, everybody. Huge fan. Love the show. My first celebration. My husband comes all the time. We leave me at home because I have to stay with the kids. This is for Freddie. Huge fan. Years. You're actually the reason I've forsaken my children. Is there any way you would possibly sign my book?
Yeah, of course.
told that to Freddy before. I have 1,000.
I tried it earlier, he would have none of it.
You have to have Freddy Prinze Jr. in your shoes.
Yeah. Good job. Okay, hey, while we're doing that, let's jump.
What
are you doing over there?
All right, what's your name?
My name's Kevin.
All right, what's your question?
I work with Sales One. We're a jewelry designer. We have a Star Wars license, and we have a prototype of Chopper, and I just wanted to give it to Dave.
Wow, this is like just like a love fest.
We're doing business here. All right.
Yeah, do you want to bring it over here? We're slowly disbanding the cast into the audience. That's nice.
I'm going to tweet a picture of the of Freddy signing for this woman so that her children can see on Twitter what mommy's doing right now.
Elliot, what do you got there?
I have Alec from California.
Okay, what's the question?
I just have a question for Steve, Dee, and James, all the other voice actors. I want to get into this industry. I've done a couple of auditions, and I just want to know... What tips can you give me?
Go to iwanttobeavoiceactor.com.
Yes. I made a website that's for anybody interested in voice acting as an amateur or maybe as a professional. It's all free, and it's everything I think about voice acting. It's called iwanttobeavoiceactor.com. It's completely free, and it's just me yammering on and on. I just got some good info, so good luck.
Okay. We've got the best seats in the house here, and I thought I should ask them if they have any questions. You do. Oh, thank you, Mark. We have a question right here. What is your name?
Connor.
Connor, what's your question for them?
This is for Dave. How did Captain Rex and all the other clones there, how did they survive? Like, how did they get back?
Oh, yeah! Yeah! Look at that. I love it.
Ezra, calm, not killing them after Order 66. No!
That's what I'm more used to. And you see, I say it's every celebration. It all comes in a package about this tall. Smiling faces, innocent looks. You think, oh, probably fun question. Who's Chopper? How did Rex survive? Well, this panel doesn't have enough time for me to explain the full depth of that story. I will say that, like, probably when I perceived it, you know, and we went back and forth towards the end of Clone Wars with Rex's fate. George and I had several conversations about it. There were a lot of things that once I knew George sold the company that I made sure he and I sat down and we discussed at length. There were a couple key topics. One was Rex, and definitely the other was Ahsoka. How did they survive? Do they survive? What happens there? We had everything mapped out right up through Revenge of the Sith. So I know in detail why that is. I'll give you something because you're here on the weekend. But if you've watched the season 6 episodes on Netflix with the clone arc where Fives discovers the nature of the encoding that they have chipped in their head, you have to remember that Fives tells Rex about that, and Fives would believe another trooper. So even though it's outlandish to Anakin that Palpatine's in charge, he actually says it to Anakin and Rex right in front of them. Fives accuses everybody. So I always felt that truth can break any spell. It's an old mythological idea that in a fairy tale, if you know the truth, you can kind of break these evil spells if your heart is true. And you have to imagine what Rex got to that point and had a blaster raise. I don't think he could do it. What would be hard for Rex, and you can wrap your head around this, is the minute Rex wouldn't execute his general, he becomes a traitor as well. And the other clones will gun down the traitor clone. So that was something we had also discussed. So that's a bit of a look at that. And you'll see, just to give you this other tease, because if you haven't thought this through, we all love Rex. Kanan, not so much.
Yeah.
It's pretty clear why. So,
everybody,
that's more than I ever give you. It's more than I ever give you.
Oh,
not more than they've ever been before.
Okay.
Matt, what's your question, Matt from Canada?
This actually is towards Freddy and Dave, because barring Mara Jade, my favorite character in Star Wars now is Barna Kanan, aka Caleb Doom. And yes, I read a New Dawn in the comics. It's fantastic. It's a great read. But it was going back to season one. It was during the temple episode with Taylor as well. And when Yoda, Frank Oz, came back and he was talking to the both of you, from an acting perspective and also maybe from a story perspective, when Yoda starts talking to him, he says, "Oh, you've taken a master now." And it's like, would you consider Yoda anointing him unofficially a Jedi Knight? And would Kanan perceive that as a knighting? And if he did or didn't, does he think, "I'm not ready for this position to be a Jedi Knight"? Or does he say it's like, "Well, sometimes I have to step up and do it. I'm a kid right here learning how to use a lightsaber"?
You're awesome, brother.
There's only one way to top that first question.
Does he have a follow-up question, too?
It's funny, everybody's laughing at you, but don't take it personally, because I asked the exact same question to Dave and asked if I could speak with Pablo. So Dave and I can discuss this. I don't know how much factual information we can give you without spoiling some of the stuff that Kanan's going to have to go through. I will tell you this. If we're staying true to the sort of five trials, I wouldn't say that Kanan is even halfway there, me personally. If you want to say that his test of courage is complete, or the test of flesh, I don't remember what the name of that one is, I'm just calling it flesh, you know, maybe you can argue those two, but it could be something that we could debate. But I can't, and I don't think Dave would tell you much either, unless you get this kid to ask. If you get too much of a sense of where Kanan's at, then you lose some of the magic of where he's going to go. But I would say if you want to count two of the five, you might be able to. Probably one for sure.
You got one right here? Oh, don't be fooled, Dave.
That's the most dangerous one.
Hello, my dear. What's your name?
Eliza.
What's your question? Don't disappoint Eliza.
Who does Chopper's voice in the movie?
Oh.
Yes.
Do it.
He's asking. He's asking Simon if he can tell.
Do it!
Who it is.
Do it!
I got you all done.
It's gonna whisper to him.
Oh, yes!
Yes!
He's whispering it to the little girl.
It's a Jedi sidebar. I told her the truth.
We're gonna find that kid. Eliza, tell us!
Okay. I have Davey from Indiana.
Right. Go for it.
Hey, thank you all for doing this panel. Rebels is great. There is an interesting poster of Ahsoka facing off with Vader. Can you shed any light on their relationship in season two and if they face off?
Kind of hoping people would ask to sign something right now.
I'll try to give you the best answers I can. Ahsoka and Vader was the topic that George and I discussed specifically. I asked him exactly what you're asking me now. I said, "What would that be like? What does she know? What would she know?" So let's just say that it's part of the story that we have to tell you. You know?
It's good.
Let's just say
that. Or you can let us know.
Right over here, okay. Ryan. I'm with Ryan from Moreno Valley. What's your question, Ryan?
Hi, guys. Thanks for being here. My question is for Dave. Is there any hope that at some point we can see the return of Cad Bane?
You know what's
was exciting to me, though, is Rex is back. Hondo's back. Hondo. See Hondo?
Hondo.
You know, what was really important, and Simon and I discussed in the beginning, there's Hondo talking about Rebels, is we wanted the cast of Rebels to have their space, wanted the characters to have their space. They had to own this time period. It's really, and this is important, I think, for everybody to remember, it's really the story of this crew, Ezra's evolution as Jedi Knight, Kanan. So it's that story. If we found a way to include characters from the past, then those character moments are important for the story that we're telling now. They're passing into the story, through the story. So I think we have to be very careful about which characters we bring into Rebels, period. And that includes the classic trilogy and the prequel trilogy as well. You worry about having this small universe, and even when we think we're being good at it, you know, I noticed a series of episodes where we had Yoda, Lando, and then Tarkin not long after. And that's like, you know, I think it played off well, but we are very conscious that we don't want it to seem like a stream of guest appearances. It has to be vital to the story, and luckily I think we find ways to do that. So if it made sense, the answer would have, you know, if he's alive, of course, yes. But anything could happen to a bounty hunter, I don't know. Cab is crazy, and I don't know where...
Voiced by the amazing Corey Burger, by the way, who's the voice of Count Dooku, Jero the Hutt, and so many others. Stuff. And Jim Cummings coming back as Hondo. Gotta give a shout out to Jim. I think we have time for one more question, Elliot.
Yes. Here we go. What's your name? This is Axel, and he has a question. Here we go.
Why is Darth Vader not dead yet? Because didn't all the movies, I mean, the Star Wars Rebels episodes come out of all the movies?
Simon, you want to take this one? You're a Star Wars expert.
Why isn't Darth Vader dead? This, you know, we take place before New Hope, so Darth Vader...
I think it's one of these things where, you know, because some people, especially someone younger like Axel, is being introduced to Star Wars in a world now. It is one of the things you have to kind of juggle, yeah, don't you, with this show?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the one of the things we talked about from the beginning, and it was the first impulse, was that we wanted the show to take place between the prequels and the original trilogy, which is confusing because I know for a lot of kids, actually, they see the prequels first.
Sure.
But for us, it was wanting to take place right before the beginning of the Rebels, of the Alliance, right before... Episode 4. So the Darth Vader that you know from the original movies, this is just before those movies take place and his sort of rise into ultimate power.
I think that's what's really exciting about what we just saw. This is as close to Anakin as you're going to get. This is right after Episode 3 in our brains here so much, and he is in his prime. So thank you for that, and let's hear it one more time for our Star Wars Rebels.
And I've got my good friend here who's going to introduce herself and her son, have a little chat. She is a fellow rogue.
Hi, I'm Danielle Lopez.
And I'm Elijah Lopez.
And Elijah is dressed as a clone and he looks pretty darn awesome. So Elijah, tell us kind of what you've thought about the convention so far and the cool things that you've experienced.
It's fun. I got me and my friends some lightsabers and we had partying time and it was a great time.
Very good. What about you?
I think the best thing that happened to us was being the security guard for Weird Al Yankovic. Considering I'm 5'3", it was really a once-in-a-lifetime dream.
Yeah, that was, again, we joked about that being a bucket list thing. We didn't even know it was a bucket list. And how about that whole, like, cantina experience?
I seriously want to go back again to the cantina. It was great just to be in the background and be part of it. It was kind of like you were part of Star Wars.
Especially with the lighting and everything like that. Have you bought any souvenirs yet?
No, not yet, but I will.
What do you have your eyes on?
Everything.
Everything? That is a fair, honest answer.
He's serious, absolutely serious. He wants a we got him a little green lightsaber, but he wants even a better one.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Corey, what about you? What have been some highlights for today so far?
We've been doing a lot of just meeting people, seeing people, and we got to see the Rebels panel, which was pretty awesome. A lot of special guests there. They showed a teaser trailer for the season 2. A lot of special things there. We'll probably talk about that later. We won't get too much about it. But we also got a chance to do a press interview with the whole cast and sit on that. And then, Dave, you got to interview Freddie.
Yeah. So all kinds of fun. So, Danielle, awesome. Thanks for being on Coffee with Kenobi. We're going to have you on later, more formally, ask you the 5 questions, all that fun stuff. But where can people say hi to you on Twitter if they want to ask you a question or just say hello?
It's kind of a long name, but it's phonetic since I teach kindergarten. Dan Ni Yell. So phonetically, yeah, at Twitter.
All right. Thank you guys so much, and keep having fun at Celebration.
We will.
Thank you.
All right, we are live at Star Wars Celebration Anaheim. We just saw the season 2 premiere of Rebels. I've got a collective here of some pretty awesome guys who love their Star Wars, and let's introduce ourselves and give our initial thoughts.
Hi, Chris Taylor here, author of How Star Wars Conquered the Universe, and wow. Yeah, I was blown away by the premiere, and without spoiling it, we all know what the trailer is about. Hopefully you've seen the trailer at this point, you've seen the poster, you know where this season is heading, and it advanced pretty far down that road, you know, much more than you might expect a season premiere to do. You might sort of think, well, have they left themselves enough room for the rest of the season to kind of get where they're going? But there were chills. I mean, people were cheering for moments that we have been waiting for, moments that we may never have expected to happen. Yeah. You know, realizations that we may never have expected to happen. And wow, I mean, you know, seeing Darth Vader on the big screen is fantastic. Seeing Ahsoka is fantastic. And you're going to have a good time with this premiere.
Hi, it's Scott Murray with the Assembly of Geeks. And yeah, I mean, I almost look at this as kind of like a sequel in a sense, because when you have a sequel, you expect everything you saw the last time to take it up another level. And they have wasted no time taking this up to another level. The things that struck me are, even in this premiere, there are, again, really strong parallels to the original trilogy that I think people are going to love. As you just alluded to, there's some questions you probably have going into this that you're going to get some small answers to that you may not expect to get so early. And the other thing that struck me was, you know, Darth Vader is involved in the premiere, and I'm just going to say that this is very much still, obviously, that the young, very powerful, very I can take everybody on myself because I'm a badass type Jedi, or now Sith, in Darth Vader. He is very much a different presence in this, as he should be, than in the original trilogy. So there is a lot to look forward to when you finally get a chance to see this. Sure, if you like the first season, you're already in for a treat in the premiere of the second season.
Yeah, and hi, Thomas Riddle, StarWarsInTheClassroom.com, and I can only echo what these two gentlemen have said. It's fantastic. Like Chris, I had no idea they were going to go this far down the road in the premiere. And like Scott, this is Vader in his prime.
Yeah,
and exactly. You're seeing a Vader that you would expect to see at this point in his story. Those who have been reluctant to watch Rebels first season because it was too kiddie or because Disney had something to do with it, if you are late getting on board this train, you better get on now.
Yeah.
Because this premiere has left no doubt that there's a different tone. This felt more like Clone Wars to me.
The stakes are higher.
The stakes are higher. The action is greater. The emotion there is just as equal as some of the best story moments in Clone Wars. And so this just bodes well for a fantastic season 2.
Here's the thing. We're talking about seeing Darth Vader in a way that we've always dreamed about, we've always heard about, we've always read Expanded Universe, which is now Legends, obviously. This exceeded my expectations, which I did not think could happen.
Yeah.
The way Vader was, and we're not going to talk about what he was, but imagine, if you will, everybody, how you've always heard him to be. It's better.
Yeah. Well, he's not diminished by being animated, and a lot of this episode felt to me very much like The Empire Strikes Back. It had a lot of that darkness to it. You know, dark, you know, tinged with the humor that Empire still had, but still, you know, that fear that they talk about, the fear and the darkness and the anger and the hatred, all of that, and the sense that this is worse than the Clone Wars, Kanan sort of alludes to that at one point, that this is worse than anything he's experienced. Or, you know, it sort of harkens back to that time, but there's less hope now. So it really does do what Empire does. So yeah, if you weren't on board, as you were saying, everyone loves Empire Strikes Back, so you better get on board now, because it's going to have that feel to it.
Yeah, and I'll tell you too, Chris, I agree. Thanks for pointing that out, because there are moments, cinematically, there are moments that with the action looks very much like some scenes from The Empire Strikes Back. With things that are happening with the Ghost and Star Destroyers, and parallels with the Falcon and Star Destroyers and chases.
Going on with the music too.
Oh, yeah, Kevin Kiner. Kevin Kiner continues to knock it out of the park with his cues. Mm. But the emotional realizations too. Just like you have moments in The Empire Strikes Back, that emotional kick in the gut.
Yeah.
You get here too. And
the thing about Empire Strikes Back is you get a lot of fear on the part of the Imperials towards Vader.
Right.
And that is very much in play here. You know, Star Wars, New Hope, you get the sense that Vader's sort of this silly toy who, you know, this guy who just occasionally strangles people, but they're still sort of rather dismissive of him. Empire is where the fear comes in, and this definitely mirrors that.
Yeah, he is no lapdog here.
Yeah,
I don't think there's any question. Even with the recent Marvel series, they kind of take a bent towards he's trying to regain the Emperor's respect, which clearly is out of the time. We're not doing anachronisms here. Mm. But it's fascinating to see. Well, I think what inspired me, besides the wonderful Vader, is that at the end of season one of Rebels, which we just saw the last episode again, I thought Kanan's journey had reached kind of a plateau. It is not. There is much more story to be had with this guy. His hero's journey is nowhere near complete, and I didn't know where they were going to go with this, but the storytelling is incredible. The gravitas, the weight, the fear.
Yeah.
I know we don't want to say too much, but it's going to be great to talk about this when it airs, whenever that may be. Any last-minute thoughts, guys? I know we're off doing the celebration things, but any last-minute thoughts?
Well, I think you're right about Kanan. I mean, he definitely is still struggling with that need to be a loner, but also the love that he has for the Ghost crew. And that's the tension, and it's clearly going to continue to be the tension of this series.
Yes.
I would say, too, that the other thing that struck me is, you know, we've heard Dave Filoni talk about some of the intentional parallels that are there. So people that are perhaps getting to know Star Wars for the first time are getting some of the things that we all got when we saw 4, 5, and 6. And I think those elements are also stronger already as this started, like the family element amongst the crew, especially as they all kind of debate whether do we really want to get this involved. We were just these people that were helping others out during the rise of the Empire, but do we really want to get involved? This Kanan has constantly asked, you know, this far, you know, into the rebellion. So it's really cool, because we know we're going to get more episodes this season than the first season too, and they're going to have a lot of great ground to cover as they go through it.
Yeah, and I'm really excited about seeing Kanan's character development during this season, just from some things that he discusses. We don't want to spoil it in this opening. He's having to come to grips with things from his past, and he's having to find his way forward in a new reality and face demons, I think, from the Clone Wars in ways that he thought he would never have to face again. So, yeah, it's going to be fantastic. Season 2, buckle up, hold on.
Yeah, well, they keep saying season 1 was supposed to give you a New Hope feel, and you nailed it, Chris. Season 2, we're definitely moving into episode 5 thematically, and the essence of it, and
How great was it to hear James Earl Jones
do this again?
That's just really...
That makes sense.
Yeah, keep that guy on retainer.
Icing on the cake, yes.
Yeah. He's got a future.
Yeah, I think he's got a future in voice acting.
And for some of you who've seen the trailer and were wondering about a couple of new characters... those questions will be answered too in this premiere. So.
Major questions about the original trilogy and how it relates to characters from the Clone Wars were answered today. And we can't wait to let everybody find out. For Chris Taylor from How Scholars to Conquer the Universe, Scott Murray, Assembly of Geeks, Thomas Riddle, Stars in the Classroom. Here we are again on the celebration floor. We're in the tattoo parlor of our things, which is, you know, kind of wild. I'm not getting my Chopper tattoo.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, it's not happening. Sorry, Corey. but Ian Desher is here. We've become friends over this incredible experience of what has happened with your life with Star Wars and Shakespeare. So, hey, man, good to see you finally. What are you thinking?
Good to see you, too. This is really fun to be here.
Yeah. And you had a pretty cool encounter already, didn't you?
Yeah, I got in the line for Mark Hamill and met him. And evidently he's reading a speech from Star Wars Shakespeare tonight. So that'll be fun.
Do you know what speech?
I don't know. Although if I had to guess, since they had the T-shirts, I'm guessing he's going to do the Alas, Poor Stormtrooper speech.
Yeah. Which is that T-shirt is flying out of here. I mean, I weren't really wanted to snag that thing, but it's hard.
Yeah, I couldn't get it either. So
that's called irony, I believe.
Yeah,
called irony, I believe. So obviously, you did the first three books, and they were incredible smashes, and so much fun. And then, of course, the prequels. I've been bugging you since the first time I ever chatted with you about, I hope this becomes a thing. And it was. What kind of challenges did you face when you had to write the prequels?
So, first of all, partially the challenge of just knowing what happens in them, because I had seen the prequels, certainly, but didn't know them nearly as well as the original trilogy. And there's so many more complex layers of things going on in them. And so I had to call on important people like Dan Zare to explain to me exactly what's going on in the prequels. I had sort of a cadre of people who helped me, think about the prequels, and Dan was one of them. You were one of them.
Yes.
That was a challenge. And then I think the other big challenge was sort of Jar Jar Binks and what to do with him, because so many people either love him or hate him, you know. And so doing something fun with his character was it was exciting, and exciting that Lucasfilm let me do what I did with him.
You know, the Jar Jar thing, I wrote a review. It's really not a review of that because it's not fair. I'm insanely biased. What you did with Jar Jar, if people understood what Jar Jar's like, I don't know if this is canon or not, or however they're doing it. I'm interested to pick your brain about that. But everyone will love Jar Jar if they read this, because you've made him more than a comedic foil. You've given him incredible substance and an intelligence that people need to look at, because they're going to change the way they think about Jar Jar. I love that. In fact, I was reading it again on the plane here, and I kept waiting on Corey saying, listen to this. He's like, what?
Well, it was a lot of fun. And like I say, I actually saw it on the chopping block in my manuscript that I got back from Lucasfilm. I could see, you know, one person from Lucasfilm saying, you know, to the story group, hey, story group, is this okay? And them responding, love it. You know, so it was interesting to sort of see that there, like, almost taken out, but then not. So in the book, Jar Jar is similar in some ways to R2-D2 and how I handled him, where there's a lot more going on than the dialogue he has with other characters. You know, he turns to the audience, he can, you know, he explains there's this whole other world. The difference with R2 is that I think when I gave R2 voice, you know, I sort of had him say what everybody would have guessed he was saying already, you know, snarky, noble things, right?
Right.
But with Jar Jar, I do feel like I sort of turned him around completely and made him this very aware character who's sort of steering events the way that he wants them to go and things like that. And so.
Well, and the cool thing, too, is that R2, he's not a challenge. People love R2. They love him. Jar Jar people don't love. In fact, a lot of people are not as high on the Phantom Menace, but as you've done with all the books, you've given nuance and depth to characters that may not have had them to the liking that someone who enjoys Shakespeare would want to see. So what kind of challenges did you have besides Jar Jar as far as, I mean, it was hard to sell the Phantom Menace. It can't be hard to sell Revenge of the Sith. Was it hard to sell the Phantom Menace?
I don't think so, because you have, you have Qui-Gon, who's such a powerful character in Phantom Menace. you have the beginning of, or at least the seeds of the Anakin Padme romance, you know, starting out there, where in Phantom Menace, Anakin at least is, you know, sort of intrigued by this person. Now, I imagine Anakin probably about 5 years older than he actually is in the movie, because I felt to sort of start working on that romance, I had to make him a little more mature than he was in the movie. So I cheated a little bit there, but so it has plenty of the same themes, and certainly the overall, you know, power plays and what's going on with the Senate and that sort of thing is, I think, very Shakespearean. It reminds me a lot of the history plays and things that are going on there. So.
I agree, and I always like seeing Hamlet and Romeo and Juliet, and just little ways that you throw those famous lines in it and put it just on them. And did I detect a little bit of Snoop Dogg in there as well?
Yes, there is a Snoop Dogg reference. Yeah, that's right. When they're going down to Tatooine, and I think it's Captain Panaka is saying he doesn't like the Hutts, you know, and he says something like, "Their minds ever on money, money ever on their minds." And then right after that, there's actually an acrostic that says Snoop. If you look carefully. So.
Oh, I did not see that. Oh, I should not be surprised. That was hilarious. I said, "Corey, listen to this, dude." And I read out loud, and he's like, "Is that Snoop?" I'm like, "That is Snoop. That is Snoop." What other kind of fun little surprises are in there?
Oh, lots of little things. Gosh, can I remember what some of... It's just been so much fun writing these books and throwing in little things here and there. Well, another one that leaps to mind immediately is when Qui-Gon faces off with Darth Maul, and they're about to have Darth Maul and Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon are about to have the last big battle. Qui-Gon pulls from Liam Neeson's famous speech in Taken, and he says something to the effect of, you know, I don't remember what the line is in Taken or in Phantom of Menace, but it's something like, you know, I have a very particular set of skills, you know, that makes me a nightmare to people like you. So he basically has the exact same speech in iambic pentameter to Darth Maul.
That was cool. That was inspired as well. And I'm glad you brought up that scene, because the image of Darth Maul with that, like, drawbridge. And, I mean, that scene in Phantom Menace, even at the most staunch of critics, that is a goosebump-inducing scene. That is a gorgeous piece of art. How does it feel to have this kind of art yet again in your amazing books?
Yeah, that's actually probably my favorite image. I mean, other than the cover image of Queen Amidala, which is just gorgeous, I think the Darth Maul image is my favorite from the book. You know, Nicholas Delort, who does these illustrations, just is amazing and continues to knock himself out. He's done a beautiful cover for The Clone Army Attacketh with Jango Fett on the cover. So it's just been so much fun seeing what he does every time.
Did you meet him recently?
I met him in the fall. Yeah, he lives in Paris, and my family and I were lucky enough to be there, and so I got to meet him. Yeah.
Well, was he pretty cool?
Yeah, nice guy. He's like in his early 20s, you know. He's really? and he's you know, like, not a huge Star Wars fan, but like Star Wars enough. And this has, of course, made him like rewatch everything and everything. So, yeah, nice guy.
So when you're writing and you're making this happen, do you say, "Here's some images I want," or does that come from Quirk, or how does that happen?
Yeah, so Quirk usually sends out a list and says, "Here are the illustrations we're thinking of asking Nicholas for the book. And, you know, do you have any thoughts about these, you know, any comments, or is there anything you're going to do with the character that might influence how these get drawn?" And so I sort of then give my feedback, and then they send that off to Lucasfilm first to approve the list, and then off to Nicholas. And then Lucasfilm again gets approval once he's done a sort of rough sketch of the illustrations.
That's pretty cool. So you've obviously written all three books. What are the release dates for the next two?
The Clone Army Attacketh is July 7th, and William Shakespeare's Tragedy of the Sith's Revenge is September 8th, I think.
Is this the first time that's ever been announced, the title?
No, I don't think so. I think it's out there. Yeah. Sorry about that.
No, don't be sorry at all. Okay, well, we obviously can't wait to see what's coming on. Looking forward to hanging out a little bit more today.
Thanks, Dan.
Give the evacuation code signal.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along. Move along.